Cruising at Christmas and the New Year, Part 1. By Worthing Goon. Image. Barbados. Pre-cruise. I have been on a number of cruises on a number of different cruise lines, but this is my first Christmas cruise, so I thought I might document it. Some time ago my mum told me that she was going to leave me some money in her will and that she wanted me to spend some of it on a Christmas cruise. So when she died earlier this year, the legacy was no surprise. Once I finally got her will sorted out and the money was in my bank account, I started to look at what was still available. Christmas cruises tend to fill up fairly early, and it was now early September, so I didn't hold out a lot of hope for Christmas 2019. I have always used an internet cruise specialist, as they tend to be more knowledgeable on cruises and have sharper prices than the high street travel agent. I scanned the website of one I had used several times before, and they had a trip out of Southampton advertised, which, with me living on the south coast, would have been ideal, so I contacted them. Unfortunately, all that was available on that cruise were expensive suites, and as I was planning to travel on my own, that was out. The young lady I was chatting to suddenly said that a couple of days before she had sold someone a similar package to that for which I was looking, but on a P&O fly cruise to the Caribbean, and there had been several cabins available then. Would I like her to check if that was still so? I jumped at the idea, having done several similar cruises in the past. A few taps on her keyboard later, she had found a single balcony cabin on the P&O Britannia doing a 15-day island hopping cruise out of Barbados, departing on the 21st December with flights from Gatwick. I was in like Flynn. The P&O charter flight was on the Saturday morning before Christmas. I can get to Gatwick in about 35 minutes, and I knew that once I had checked my luggage in at the airport, I would not have to bother with it until it was delivered to my cabin. It was just what I wanted, so I booked it straight away. A few days later, Thomas Cook went belly up. Unknown to me, the P&O charter flight I had been placed on was operated by Thomas Cook Airlines. I got a call from my travel agent to say that I had a choice to make. I could fly from Birmingham Airport for an extra £100, fly from Manchester for no extra money, or have my money back. I have a good friend who lives 15 minutes from Manchester Airport who offered me a meal and a bed for the night before the flight, so Manchester it was. I set about getting all my Christmas cards and presents sorted out early, and by the first week of December I had everything done, even down to booking meet and greet parking at Manchester Airport. I had never been so advanced with my preparations. I even got my stuff together a few days before I was due to depart. I heard on the radio that the Friday afternoon I intended to drive north was predicted to be very busy on the roads, so I decided to leave at 10 o'clock. Friday and Saturday, 21st and 22nd December. Friday came and it was wet, very wet. The radio told me the trains weren't running south of Gatwick, and the M23 south of Gatwick was closed as a river had burst its banks. The roads around Crawley, that traffic was using as detours, were flooded, and there were loads of breakdowns and accidents. Perhaps my enforced switch from Gatwick to Manchester was providence. My sat-nav said 251 miles to go and predicted a 14:30 arrival. But it was wet, very, very wet. I was directed up the A24 and made good progress until just outside Dorking when the queues started. I watched my ETA slipping. The M25 was busy and wet, the M40 was wet and slow, the M42 wet and stopped start. My ETA was now 16:15. The M6 toll was clear and dry, ETA stayed the same. The M6 around Stafford is being converted into a smart motorway. It was truly awful, and by the time I got past the roadworks, where as usual there was no work actually being done, my ETA was 16:40. The last bit of the journey was a joy, and the sat-nav got me to the door at 16:25, worn out, but in one piece. It was great having a chat with my old friend and his partner over her roast chicken dinner, but it was an early night for me, as check-in was 8 o'clock the following morning. Once again my sat-nav took me straight to the meet and greet parking, which worked like a dream. I cannot say the same for QA check-in. The queues snaked around barriers to the four open check-in desks. When you tell nearly 300 people to check in at 8 a.m. why only have four desks open? 30 minutes later, when I was almost at the head of the queue, four more desks opened. But the guy who checked in my case really knew what he was doing, and it took him less than 2 minutes to sort me out and present me with a boarding pass. Then it was the queue for security and 30 minutes more before some officious little man demands you completely empty all your pockets including handkerchiefs and folding money and take your belt off. Has a hijacker ever used a £20 note to hold up an aircraft? Of course you then have to survive the wiggly assault course through the so-called duty-free shops to get into the terminal proper. By now I needed a sit-down, coffee and a bacon bap. But first a quick look at the departure board revealed the flight had a note saying the gate would be advised at 11:10, not bad as it was scheduled to take off at 11:05. So I bought a paper and settled down to have the much-needed grub. At 11:15 the gate number was unveiled and a huge queue formed. At 11:45 the plane started boarding and everybody was on by noon. No calls for missing passengers, I think everyone was itching to be off. What can I say about the flight? Well, it was 8 hours 20 minutes. They served roast chicken, don't they always? For the main meal and an egg mayonnaise roll for a snack, don't they always? The legroom was surprisingly good and the drinks were complimentary, including wine with the main meal. The couple sitting next to me had to ask for extra tonic as the measure of gin was huge, at least a double-double. I even managed to watch a film and have hours sleep. Landing at Barbados we were the fifth due a 787-8 flight for P&O that afternoon and with one more flight, delayed even more than us, still to come. The smiles on the ground staff's faces were beginning to wear thin. Still the buses rolled up at the base of the steps from the aircraft and within 15 minutes of touchdown we were heading for MS Britannia. Check-in for the ship was quick and easy, present your passport, have your photo taken, get your cruise card, through security and up the gangway. Oh, I nearly forgot, as you got off the bus you were greeted with a garland and a rum punch and before you went through security there were cold towels. At the top of the gangway you have your cruise card scanned and are normally greeted by an officer who gets a member of the crew to show you to your cabin. But we were over an hour late, so we had to go directly to our emergency muster stations for the compulsory drill. The international law is that it must take place within 24 hours of embarking, but British passenger ships go on better and have it before sailing. I was mustered in the theatre, at least in the event of an emergency I will have a nice comfy seat. Then up to my cabin and I mean up. The theatre is at the bow of the ship on decks 4, 5 and 6. My cabin is above it on deck 16. Thank God for Mr. Otis and his invention of the lift. I had a single, balcony cabin. Not huge but quite big enough for one. Image. My single cabin, with free slippers. My cabin steward Neves met me at the door and showed me around. It took all of 30 seconds. My suitcase hadn't arrived yet. A quick whiz out onto the deck for the sail away party and a free glass of champagne.